News.
You're tuned to WFHB
91.3
and 98.1 FM.
Volunteer powered,
listener supported.
Community radio for South Central Indiana.
Welcome to WFHB's Daily Local News.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers from the Bloomington community.
And supported by the generosity of listeners like you.
Good afternoon from the studios of Community Radio 91.3 FM, reporting live for WFHB. This is Carolyn Vandeweel.
And I'm Ron Bronson. This is the Daily Local News for Thursday, December 14th, 2017.
I'm trying to understand how to share, how to communicate, how to cultivate, and that's the imagination, and that's community.
Coming up in today's program, poet Ross Gay and singer-songwriter Casey Swerk met in one of Gay's IU creative writing classes. Big Talk's Michael Glab speaks with Swerk and Gay about their creative process and artistry in today's feature report. But first, your local headlines.
The Monroe County Board of Commissioners have announced that they are joining with the City of Bloomington in a class action lawsuit against opioid manufacturers and distributors. Speaking in a December 13th press conference, Commissioner Julie Thomas says manufacturers and distributors cannot be allowed to continue marketing opioids as a safe treatment option.
In general, the lawsuit alleges deceptive marketing by pharmaceutical manufacturers, including issuing false information regarding risks, use, and safety of opioids, and against distributors who have failed to report and stop suspicious orders of opioids.
Thomas went on to cite statistics in local overdoses.
Pharmacy data in Monroe County indicates there are 106 opioid prescriptions per 100 residents. From 2012 to 2014, the number of opioid overdoses recorded at IU Bloomington Hospital increased 433%.
Thomas said the city and county are asking for compensation for the financial burden the opioid crisis has placed on local government. Indianapolis-based law firm Cohen & Mallett will be handling the lawsuit. The firm is currently handling a similar suit being brought by the city of Indianapolis. Richard Shevitz is an attorney with Cohen & Mallett. He says about 15 years ago, medical professionals viewed opioids as addictive and approved them for a much narrower list of conditions. Shevitz said drug manufacturers are directly responsible for causing opioids to be prescribed more widely.
They literally succeeded in changing the standards for the medical profession. They did this by paying doctors to write articles. They did this by organizing so-called front groups, pain management associations, to alter the way the use of opioids is viewed by the medical profession. And the most dramatic example of that, in my view, is a statement by the U.S. Surgeon General just last year who said, we were taught, incorrectly, that opioids were not addictive.
Shevitz states that distributors track every pill distributed in a community. According to Shevitz, distributors have routinely disregarded the Federal Controlled Substances Act, which is designed to prevent suspicious opioid orders.
The distributors turned a blind eye to the overprescription of opioids, and they have been held responsible by the federal government. There have been fines and civil penalties in the ranges of millions of dollars. The manufacturers before them have also been subject to fines and civil penalties. But those are fines that go to the federal government. Those dollars haven't flowed back to the communities like this one.
Commissioner Amanda Barge says commissioners pledge any funds recouped will be invested in fighting the opioid epidemic in Monroe County. In other news, the City of Bloomington Utilities Department plans to begin selling water in bulk next year. Speaking in the December 11th Utility Service Board meeting, utilities engineer Phil Peden said his team has chosen a site on the city's south side off of Winton Thomas Road. Board member Julie Roberts asked Peden for details on who might access the site.
So what would this be used for, Phil, and how would people pay for it? Is it like you fill up your truck and you put your card in the slot and you pay for your water, or it is a drinkable water, or who's it for?
Yeah, it's potable water, and it is for some might want potable water out at their house maybe that doesn't have a water hookup at their place, or it might be for a power washing company or it might be our Vactor truck that goes along needs filled up. And so we're still in the process of determining how we'll do it, but this particular manufactured pump station that we're looking at would have, or distribution station, I'm not exactly sure the terminology there, but it'd have a bad reader, so they could get certified in here. We could check out their truck and how they're going to load it for the proper connection, and then backflow prevention, and then they would be able to swipe a credit card.
Utilities Director Vic Kelson says currently the department's only option for bulk potable water sales is by hydrant metering.
Hydrant meters open up a lot of opportunities for cross connections, and it's been our objective to get rid of the hydrant meter program over time, but we really need to have an alternative for bulk sales. So this is a step in that direction. So over time, we'd like to start phasing out the hydrant meters as we make sure we have enough opportunities for bulk sales.
Peden said the site off Winston-Thomas Road may be difficult for some to find, and described the location.
Just to give you a description there, it's near Royal South on the south side on South Walnut Street. I think there used to be a Hostess Bakery outlet store nearby there. So it's just west of that location. And there you can see the fire training station if you're familiar with where that's at.
Peden said the site was chosen because of its easy access and plentiful water source. In other news, the utilities department is putting its Lucre Pool wastewater treatment plant back together after extensive mold remediation efforts. Utilities Director Vic Kelson says he's now working to replace the plant ceiling and walls. Board member Julie Roberts quizzed Kelson about working conditions at the plant. Kelson estimates project costs will run no more than $30,000 and that the work should be completed this month. Kelson says the flooring will be replaced in a separate project. The City Utilities Department discovered the mold in the plant ceiling, walls, and ventilation ducts in August. The board promptly contracted with Fields Environmental to begin mold remediation.
Monroe County Treasurer Jessica McClellan is changing the county's investment policy in order to take advantage of rising interest rates. Speaking in the December 13th meeting of the Monroe County Council, McClellan said previously the investment policy only allowed for short-term investments of up to 2 years. She says the state law actually allows counties to invest in public funds for up to 5 years.
To give you a little bit of background on 2 to 5 year investments that public funds are allowed to be used for, it's only allowed to be used for investments that are backed by the full faith and security of the U.S. government, and that includes government bonds, U.S. Treasury notes, anything that if it was to fail, you would get your money back from the U.S. government.
McClellan said that laddered longer-term investments will yield better income for the county.
2 years ago, our investment income was about $137,000. That's just a drop in the bucket. Last year, it was about $234,000. This year, already with rising interest rates, it's surpassed $500,000 this year. If we take only 25% of our county portfolio and put it into these types of investments, it'll be about $15 million that could be invested long-term, and just that portion itself could raise $500,000. And then there'll still be about $25 million in savings that is still benefiting from being more liquid and getting a high interest rate. So about $500,000 from a smaller chunk of money.
The County Council unanimously approved the investment policy change. County Council members continue to hear from county residents opposing a waste transfer station proposed by Indiana Green Transfer and Recycling. More than a dozen area residents regularly appear at the council's weekly meetings, lobbying the council to take a stand against the project. Some assert council member Shelley Yoder's past association with Indiana Green Transfer and Recycling is a conflict of interest. County Attorney Michael Flory spoke to the issue in this week's council meeting.
There have been allegations of conflict of interest, and for the record, I think it's very important to stress for your benefit and the council's that conflict of interest is a legal status. It's covered by statutes and court decisions that spell it out. It generally covers something that ties in with a vote taken by an elected official on an item that is before them that is directly going to benefit them or a family member.
Yoder Cutter ties with the company in November. The Monroe County Council has not approved or denied the proposed waste transfer station project. Flory says there is no conflict of interest where council member Shelley Yoder is concerned.
If anyone feels that they have further questions, I'll be glad to meet with you and talk with you about them to kind of broaden that. But in terms of the very specific allegation of conflict of interest, in terms of the role the council member Yoder has as a member of the Monroe County Council, that doesn't exist.
Indiana Green Transfer and Recycling applied to IDEM for a solid waste transfer permit in September. The company applied for an IDEM permit without regard for a local ordinance that requires prior approval from the County Solid Waste Management District Board. Co-owner Jeff Fagno has notified the county his company is now reviewing the project in light of the feedback by area residents.
Concerned county residents are also pressuring the county commissioners weekly to take a stand against the proposed waste transfer station. Among them is Jean DeFelice, who addressed the commissioners in their December 13th meeting.
You could write a letter of disapproval to IDEM at this point. There's nothing stopping you from expressing what your feelings are on this. And if it does move forward to the Solid Waste Management District, right, who has to certify that it meets public safety, health, and all these standards, and if by any stretch of the imagination they did certify that this was a great thing to do, you know, you could assure us now that you would hold a public hearing where we could gather more of the community together, have the Herald Times, you know, really talk about, really get the media involved in what's going on here with the Solid Waste Management District Board of Directors, with our current commissioners, where they stand.
Commissioners Pat Stauffers and Julie Thomas responded.
You know, I had a nice chat with Mr. Spicer this morning, and I imparted to him that I don't know anybody on this Board of Commissioners that's in support of this project.
No.
That we've been talking about, and has made no expression in favor of that project.
True. Yep.
Sure. So.
Agree. But we do have the obligation under 2007-18 to hold a public hearing if these person who petitions IDEM for a site goes to the Solid Waste District. The Solid Waste District makes a finding, and then we will hold, depending on what happens, a public hearing. So yes, that will happen. And it's, you know, that's part of that process. And that's where we take public input. And that's, that opportunity is not gone. It would be invoked, but we're not at that stage, as was mentioned earlier.
The waste transfer station has been proposed for an area zoned light industrial, or LI. Business Park co-owner Robert Shaw is among those asking officials to rewrite the county zoning code on light industrial uses.
We want trash transfer out of the LI zone. It's inappropriate by the definition. It shouldn't be in there. Take it out, protect our lands and our jobs that already exist out there, and, you know, we'll go away.
Thomas said a plan commission subcommittee is reviewing county ordinances with an eye to closing loopholes in an effort to ease residents' anxieties.
And so we have, in fact, a short, a medium, and a long-term solution that we're proceeding with. I am very hopeful that in the short term, meaning next week, if all goes well, we will be able to invoke at least the short-term portion of the solution. Medium term would be January, February, depending on Plan Commission schedule, and then the longer term is probably 3-4 months out.
Thomas referenced the county's existing trash and recycling collection points in her response.
But I will tell you, the county's Solid Waste Management District has recycling and what are trash transfer stations, but collection points for residential garbage, and these are located
in or near residential areas. We're not even talking heavy industrial. If you had to move all of those future sites for collecting recycling to heavy industrial areas, you're taking them away from where residents can use them easily. And so we have a lot to grapple with. It's a very complex topic, but we're trying to manage the commercial side versus the institutional side, the institutional public side, and to ensure that everyone's treated fairly, that there would be opportunities, multiple opportunities for hearings, for public comment and input, including notice as well. So that's the goal, and we are working on that. Clearly, there are some gaps in the process, and we're working to correct those as quickly as we can.
In other business, commissioners renewed the county's contract with the Indiana Recovery Alliance through 2019. The IRA operates the county's syringe services program with oversight from the Monroe County Health Department. Commissioners renewed the syringe service program itself in their meeting last week. Indiana Recovery Alliance co-founder Chris Abert says syringe access is a small percentage of the overall work his organization does.
And it's essential because it gets people into the door. It gives us access to them, again, prior to criminal charges or prior to mental health crisis, so that we can begin working with people and connect them in meaningful ways with their community. And if there's one thing that I'm sure of, it's that the solution, or at least a huge part of the solution to chaotic drug use, to problematic drug use, to the health crisis that we're facing right now, is meaningful connection to the community.
In thanking commissioners for their support, Abert said their actions locally have a broader effect in the region.
So what you're doing not only has an impact on our local community, it changes the national narrative, right? Because if Indiana is going to do these things, then other states, right, like North Carolina, yeah, Alabama, Tennessee, Kentucky, Virginia, feel that it's politically acceptable to follow a line. So, mm-hmm, again, not just leaders in our immediate community, but nationwide in these decisions that we make here.
Commissioners also heard from Health Administrator Penny Caudle, who reports the county has received $25,000 from the Indiana Department of Health for overdose prevention. Caudle says the grant funds will go towards two projects. The first is a countywide overdose prevention plan.
If you think back last summer when we had, a series of overdoses occurring all at one time, so this will have a think about emergency preparedness, right? How do we respond in those circumstances so that we really have kind of a plan in place to do that?
Caudle said the second project is a referral system for those seeking substance abuse treatment.
I describe it as 211 for treatment, mm-hmm, services, but it is pathways to recovery is what we're calling it. And we'll be building a system so that people who are in need of care and need help navigating the bureaucracy and the system and finding a bed, finding services, can call and get connected with someone.
Caudle says because the grant is a one-time only award, she and Commissioner Amanda Barge are looking for additional funding sources. Also on the commissioner's agenda was a letter of intent with the city of Bloomington regarding a food and beverage tax. The tax is being considered as a way to fund expanding the Bloomington-Monroe County Convention Center. County Attorney Jeff Cockrell states the letter itself does not approve the tax. Cockrell says it only clarifies how the tax could be used based on where it's collected.
And so what this does is it says, if it happens within the county's collection area, we can use it for county projects. If it happens within the city collection area, 92.5 of that will be dedicated towards the convention center expansion project, and the remainder would be for, I think they want an ambassador program. Granted, that would have to go through there's an advisory committee that is established because of that, but this is basically to outline those expectations, and that's the purpose of the letter.
Commissioner Thomas was the only commissioner to vote against the letter of intent, saying the county has not fully explored other funding options. Recording live for WFHB, I'm Carolyn Vandeweel.
And I'm Ron Bronson. Support for WFHB is provided by attorneys Eric Slotograph and Ben Nioff. Slotograph Nioff is located at 200 East 3rd Street in downtown Bloomington, assisting families and small businesses in meeting the legal challenges of life. providing estate planning and wills, as well as family law services. More information is available at 812-332-6000 or at slotographlegal.com. Slotograph Nioff, law for business, community, and life.
Ross Gay is an award-winning poet, author of the best-selling Catalog of Unabashed Gratitude. Katie Swerk is a multi-talented musician who has released her first album, This Is Water, this past summer. The two met this year in one of Ross Gay's creative writing courses at Indiana University. Teacher and pupil find their respective arts have been enhanced by the meeting. Gay and Swerk join Michael Glab on this week's edition of Big Talk.
Hi, this is Big Talk. Michael Glab here. My guests this week in the studio, two of them, Ross Gay, who I like to call Bloomington's unofficial poet laureate.
Pretty good.
I'm making him laugh already. Along with Casey Swerk, who's a fine musician. This year released her debut album called This Is Water.
Yeah.
Ross, you teach poetry. Pardon me, but how do you teach poetry?
I don't know. I've been asking myself that same question. Casey's in my class, so she knows that a few times, you know, periodically I'll be like, so this is an experiment. You all know that. And they're kind enough to indulge the experiment. I don't know. I feel like there's two things that I am trying to understand how to share, how to communicate, how to cultivate. And that's the imagination and that's community.
Do students fail?
What do you mean by fail?
Can you be a bad poet?
I write mostly poems that I don't like, but I work on them and I fiddle with them and I push on them and I transform them so that once they finally become poems that I do like, they usually go from poems that would not be particularly good into something that I'm interested in. So, but the idea of like failure, you know, I have a different kind of relationship to that, because another thing that, you know, that since you asked, that another thing that I'm realizing that I'm hoping my classes become spaces where practice becomes really valued, practice and something like sketching. So everything you're doing is like a sketch for something, you know, which is to say that probably nothing is a failure. Mm. Probably nothing's a failure. Probably everything is a step toward the thing that you'll make eventually, you know, the beautiful thing you'll make eventually.
Myself as a writer, the biggest challenge is to get rid of that
totally
person in your head that says, no, that sucks.
That's right. Yeah. That's the thing. I mean, if a writer or an artist or a maker or a person loosens up, it seems, their relationship to needing to make a kind of perfect thing, but instead imagines the thing that they're making to be the thing that needs to be made, you know, it seems like you don't get stuck as much.
Casey, you take class with Ross. Is this going to help you in your writing of lyrics?
I met with Ross at the very beginning of the year, and it came up that I was had a great focus in lyricism, but I had never taken a poetry class. I don't read poems. I'm very new into this whole writing thing. And so when we were talking, I had asked him, is like, okay, should I, you know, craft what we're learning or change the projects so they suit what my quote unquote niche is? And he was like, no, like, because whatever you're going to do, whatever you're going to create in my class is going to end up helping that, but it's going to be good to like kind of focus outward on the kind of like something that you suck at. Like, I can't draw for the life of me. And he had us like lay outside and sketch a tree, and allowing that journal to like suck. And like, if you look back at it and you're like, is that a tree or is that like a boat? And being okay with that, and the amount that I've grown in his class, and just looking at my lyrics, I've written a couple songs while I've been in his class, just on my own time, and seeing how the way I look at the world and the way I create, and such a greater focus that I'm attuning myself into the beauty of things. Mm-hmm. It's been so inspiring to see a poet who's, at least in my mind, happy and colorful. Mm-hmm. And he never comes into class wearing black. Mm-hmm. And like, I mean, granted, like, it's fine if you wear black, like, whatever. And it's fine if you're not happy.
There's no stereotype, I'll tell you that.
No, but it's not like he avoids subjects that are sad, that are violent, like exactly what you're saying. But it's been so eye-opening to me, because so much of my writing and so much of my rumination on art is about things that I do not understand and things that have happened to me or things that have happened to other people that I dearly love. And there's such a natural way to lean into that and to not push yourself to put color on top of it. Mm-hmm. And that's been something that I've really like opened my eyes for.
Now, I suggest, Ross, that we listen to a little music. What do you say?
Great idea.
You ready?
Yeah, I'm ready.
Shoot.
Okay. The song is called Come Home.
I don't know where you're going. And I don't know where you've been. But please, but please, won't you tell me all if I'll see you again? If I'll see you again. But all the rubble just stays inside. And all the memories, the melodies, just trying to stay alive. Kicked back by a heartbeat that won't speak. But trying to make a sound with white walls and a hospital gown. Oh, the whisper of your touch has never slipped away. Oh, the passing of a lover who's forgotten how to love. Who's forgotten how to love. I'm here, are you really there? 'Cause there's a part of me that's oh so scared. I'm counting up the sleepless nights, covers for the skies, hoping you'll be.
Ross Gay, the poet. Casey Swerk, the musician. Thanks for joining us on Big Talk.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Support for WFHB comes from MPI Solar, a Bloomington business specializing in solar hot water, solar electricity, and solar hot air systems. MPI Solar designs and installs solar power generation systems that encourage independence and individual responsibility. Found locally at 812-334-4003 and on the web at mpisolarenergy.com.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB. Today's headlines were written by Sarah Vaughn for Cats Week, a partnership with Community Access Television Services. Our feature was produced by Michael Glab.
Our engineer today is Chris Martin. Our theme music is provided by The Impossible Shapes. Executive producer is Wes Martin. For WFHB, this is Ron Bronson.
And I'm Carolyn Vandeweel. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered independent daily news program.
Stay tuned for Blooming Out, Indiana's only LGBTQI public affairs show, coming up next on WFHB.
The Daily Local News is produced by a staff of over 50 volunteers
working in the WFHB News and Public Affairs Department.
Comments, suggestions, and story ideas
may be submitted directly to our news staff via email.
The address is news@wfhb.org.